Today's daf is daf Kuf Yud Dalet. We're holding on the fourth line, and we spoke about yesterday the question of Eid Na'aseh Dayan and the fact that there's a difference between people who are next to someone who is being mitzaveh. He's giving away his property. They can write up a will if it's at night and sign on it as witnesses, and they can actually execute the will if it's the daytime, and they are three people, so they can act as a bedin. And today, entirely as a tangential issue, we're just bringing in now a halacha that has a lot to do with what we mentioned yesterday about acting precipitously and in such circumstances. And that's a very fascinating question. It has to do with the general halacha of kinyanim. Somebody's making a kinyan. Now, there is, you will recall, a halacha called kinyan sudar, which is very, very different than the nature of standard kinyanim. Normal kinyan is an actual transference of ownership. Whereas a kinyan sudar, which, you know, we do today when you're mechayev yourself on a ketubah or things like that, you lift up the other guy's handkerchief or something, the Adam's handkerchief. The idea over here is that it's an indication of commitment rather than actually closing something by physically taking it into your possession and so on. Normally, a statement of intent is a meaningless thing. What do you mean, I intend? But if it's coupled with a kinyan, then already it has some kind of real applicability. Now the question is, because it's possible to do such a thing by acting precipitously, it's very similar to a situation nowadays in which you can give over a credit card and you're going to act because you don't really think for a moment what that's going to do to your bank account, because after all, it's just a credit card, you know, and the kids know this. It's just a credit card, so nobody has to pay for it, right? So here, too, a guy makes a kinyan, you know, yeah, it's a good idea. You're serious? Yeah, I'm really serious. You lift up the handkerchief. No, a handkerchief. What's the price of a handkerchief? You know, and by then, the guy is caught. So it's clear that a type of kinyan like this, which is essentially a commitment to an intent of some kind, is not a typical kinyan. And because of that, it has in it the attendant psychological issues, which is, I might say it, do it, before I'm really ready for it. And because of that, just like there is a little time period in which a person could change his mind about buying a new car or, you know, any place where he might have acted a little bit too quickly, so too the tikkun of the kinyan sudar has a built-in delay factor. And the question is, what is that delay? It's obvious that there's a delay factor because that's the nature of the kinyan. Because it isn't really a gemar, it's an indication of a gemar. Therefore, asks the Gemara, what is that factor? So, kinyan ad ematai chozer, at what point is it still churning in the brains of the guy who's already picked up the handkerchief? So, what point can you still change your mind? Because, after all, it isn't really itself the achievement, it's more the commitment to the achievement. So, Rabba Omar, kozman shiyoshvim, if you were sitting down, and you were discussing this thing, and you made the kinyan, and then the banquet goes on, and you're discussing other things, but you're still sitting there. So then before you stand up at the end of the meal, you could say, you know, maybe I was a little bit too hasty. Rav Yosef says, no, it's kozman shoskim bato inyan. You can't, it's got to be that you were actually still discussing the issue. So if you're still discussing the issue, then we could say that you haven't really concluded in your mind. But once we've moved on, moving on doesn't mean you stand up and walk away. Moving on means, like we say today, all right, let's move on. Let's get to the next issue.
So how about
the
those
point
Yankees?
That you've... Huh?
How about those Yankees?
Exactly. How about those Yankees? So once you've moved on, you can't change your mind anymore. That's basically it. You've stopped thinking about it. And says Rav Yosef, now look, the sugya we had yesterday makes it clear, I think, that it's much more reasonable the way I say it. Om Rav Yehuda Kavasi Didi Mistabra. Because remember Rav Yehuda said yesterday, Om Rav Yehuda Shlosha Shenichlasu Levakar Tacholeh, that if three people were present there and it's during the day and the guy is handing out his last will and testament, that they can actually act upon it. And Ratzu Kotvim, if they want to, they can make it a will that they sign, but if they want to, they can actually be Osindin. Now, Lamaisa, I mean, certainly the norm is that you don't get up, walk away, and then come back and take care of the things. I mean, you're sitting there, you're being mavaka the chole. I mean, the assumption is, I would think, that as long as they're sitting there, they're still doing all the work. Now, if Rava is right, and the shir is kozman shi yoshvim, so then that means that even though they've been talking about all kinds of other things, the chole could still change his mind. So how could they possibly write up a document that so-and-so is committed to such-and-such if it isn't even true? Even if he doesn't change his mind, it isn't true. Because at the time that they were writing it, they were still sitting there. If the guy would have said, nah, you know what, forget about it. I don't want to write out this last will and testament. So then, hinochinami, there would be nothing to say. So it's a lie what they're writing. Certainly to act as a bezdin, it's all one big lie. Because there never was a commitment on his part, according to Rabbi Bashenke. The way I understand it is very simple. They were sitting, you know, and they change the subject. Then before they leave, they write it up for him. So then at that point, they really can write it up for him because it's finished. It's completed the moment that they change the topic. So Isaac Adaitach, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi is right in Kol Zman Shiyoshvim, then Leichesh Dio Maharabe, how could you write that he committed himself? Even though it says leichush, it doesn't really mean leichush, because it really is, it's immaterial whether he actually did. But since he could, that itself means that what you're writing is not true. You said he's committed. Where do you see he's committed? Omer Ravashi Amrita L'Shmaitza Kamener Rav Kahana. Ravashi said, I said that over to Rav Kahana, Rav Yosef, saying that he thinks it's more reasonable like him. And I asked Rav Kahana, I mean, does it really make that much more sense? I'll leave it to Rav Yosef. Because I mean, we are talking a case of people that are sitting down and they're talking. And now they're going to write up what they were talking about. So, I mean, the simple case is that they didn't change and start talking about anything else. They're sitting there. He's giving them his last will and testament. They're still sitting there. They're writing it out. So it's just as much a problem. I'll leave the Rabbi Yosef. This is according to Rabbi. Why should we say that, well, they started talking about the Yankees? You know? So according to Yosef, you're also going to have to say the same thing. I mean, you could ask Rav Yosef, how could you say he's committed? I mean, so obviously Rav Yosef's also going to have to say that clearly, if you could write up that he was committed and that this is his last will and testament, so Rav Yosef's also going to have to admit that what? This likum inyana linyana, that they obviously started indeed talking about the Yankees. And then they write it out afterwards. That's normal by you. In the middle of this very important last will and testament, now to start talking about the Yankees, it's very difficult to believe, but okay, I guess we'll have to say that. So then why not say the same thing according to Rava? I mean, the truth is, obviously, Rabbi Yosef didn't hold it was a raya. He just says, it's more reasonable. But, I mean, is it really more reasonable? You could say, according to Rava, the kamuvada yativa, they got up and then they sit down. Now, Lamaisa, I mean, obviously, Rabbi Yosef held it's much more reasonable to say, you know, when you're talking, you try to take away the tension, you change the subject, but to get up and to sit back down again, that's a little strange. If you're getting up, means that the visit is over. Then you suddenly turn around, come back in, and you say, should we write that up for you? That's not as usual a case. Okay, but Lamaisa, not much of a riot. The truth is, says the Gemara, Hilchata Kavati Rabbi Yosef, Bisadeh Inyan Umechtes Asimen. With a soda and an Indian and a half, baby. So this is how we pass like Rabbi Yosef. Now the truth is, it's a very funny way to pass like Rabbi Yosef because nobody was arguing in the case of Mechza that we're going to see. But so what does it mean? First of all, it's only referring but Pashtas to the cases of Machlokas of Rabbi Yosef and Rabba, which are common. So when we're saying Yosef Kavas to Rabbi Yosef only in these three cases. So if all of these three cases were indeed Machlokas and Rabba and Rav Yosef, we could say that's a rule all over Shas. But it's more than that, because it's talking about a case where Rabba doesn't even argue. There's no recorded Machlokas of Rabba and Rav Yosef. The Rav Tosfos says there's two issues over here. First of all, it can't be coincidental that the three cases that we're talking about, Soda, that was the Soda we had back in the first parak, was talking about the heirs that were arguing, and one of them said, well, to me it's worth Kenichsa to be Bar Marion. Very expensive, and it's all a function of what it's worth to me. You say you want to get it because it's on your boundary. I say it's very valuable to me. That, Rabbi Yosef, you have a right to make that kind of taina. Okay, so there we paskin like Rabbi Yosef. The inyan is the case we just talked about. Me inyan le inyan. It has to be that they change the topic. Here he was arguing with Rabbi. But the case of mechza, He wasn't, he just says the din over there is that we learn out from Aharon, by Aharon of Anav, it's Mechza, to Aharon Mechza Levanav, we learn the same thing when somebody gives something to a woman and his children. Okay, again, we're going to get to that much later on in the Masechta. But the bottom line is that he's paskening here, Hilchot HaKavate, where there's no machloket. Therefore, says Tosfos, that there's actually a different psak over here. The psak being that we only pasken like Rabbi Yosef in Baba Batra in these three things, even where there wasn't a machloket for Rabbi Yosef and Rabba, besides the general rule that we pasken like Rabba against Rabbi Yosef Bechlal. So that over here we need to mention the things that were between Rabbi Yosef and Rabba as well. Fine. In any event, the halacha would be here indeed. The moment you change the topic, at that moment the kinyan is chal, if you'd already made the kinyan, and you can't change your mind. That's why they always, you know, try to get the chosin involved in other things after you sign six of it. I mean, you never know. Well, you know, bring him a drink, talk about the Yankees. Well, why are we talking about the Yankees? Oh, nothing. Okay, now the next case we had in the Mishnah, the next topic, is the third case. Now, the third case, as we spoke about in the Mishnah, is a little bit weird because it's a direct inverse of the second case. Let's take a look back again on Kufchet at the Mishnah, and let's remind ourselves of what that was about. So it's said over there, the second case was, we have Elu, first we have our Nochlu and Marfilin, is obviously the father and the sons to each other, brothers, and so on. Then we had the second case, Ha'ish et Imo, a man will inherit his mother, a man will inherit his wife, and B'nei Achayot, which we learned was B'nei Achot, the nephews of a man's sister, all of these cases will inherit, so the uncle that dies, this is the proverbial rich uncle, will indeed be inherited by his nephews. Fine, but they will not be manchil. If they die, the uncle will not inherit them. We never hear about a proverbial rich nephew. There's got to be a reason for that. Now the Mishnah turns around and takes the same case in the inverse. So it says, Ha'isha et baneha, which is the opposite case of the ish et imo. So this is the mother, her son. Ha'isha et ba'ala, that's the opposite case of the man, ish et ishto. And the acheya'im, that's the brother of the mother, that was the rich uncle, who is not going to inherit these only manchil v'lo nochlim. Now that's exactly the same thing that you just said, but you started from the other end. Is there really a purpose in stating this? It doesn't add one thing. It's simply the mirror image. Any fool can make that out from what you just said. Ask the Gemara, what was the point of saying that case in the Mishnah? The whole Bava is extra. There may have been nekudas that were not absolutely necessary in the other Bavas, but it's not that the entire Bava was a complete waste. What is the Mishnah saying this for? Tanale Reisha, you just got finished saying, Reisha meaning over, not Reisha Mamish, but the Seifa of the Reisha, that is the second case. So Tanale Reisha, Ha'ish et Imo, the Ha'ish et Ishto, same business. I'll tell you what it's coming to teach me. Hakamashmalan, by creating this as a set, it's doing a comparison, and it's saying, the Isha et Bina is Dumya, the Isha et Baala. It's meant to make a comparison between the cases. Remember yesterday, the last thing we learned was that a Baal is not Yoresh Baruch de Muhzak. So what did that mean? That if the wife now had died and her father was still alive, and then her father dies after she dies, the Baal will not inherit it because he was only potentially an heir, but she never had it, so it wasn't muhzak biyadeha, and therefore it will go to her son, not to the husband, right? That must be the comparison. It's coming to tell me that in the same way that a woman, ma isha et baala, in ha baal yoresh et ishto bakever, so just like the husband will not be yoresh his wife if she is not alive, af isha et bina, in ha bein yoresh et imo bakever, la'anchil la'achin min ha'av. The chiddush over here is that a ben will not be morish his mother in any way, meaning that if the son was not alive when his mother died, the Yerusha does not go to him to pass to his other heirs, which would mean that the mother's property would go to her dead son, and from the dead son back up to the dead son's dead father, and then move from the dead father down to his living brothers, the children of the dead father or the brothers. They're only half-brothers, though. They're only related to the father, which means that he would be taking his mother's property in the grave and giving it to his brothers from his father, completely unrelated to his mother. So in order to avoid that inference, Mishnah wants to make it very clear that the Horasha, in terms of the woman to the husband, which doesn't happen in the grave, if she is in the grave, it doesn't happen when the son is in the grave, to be morish to his other heirs. So therefore puts them together so that you it would stress, do you note that there's an equivalence over here in the way that there is a Yerusha to the husband and not the other direction? Well, it's true by the son too. There's a Yerusha in one direction but not in the other direction. And therefore he will not indeed be able to be Morish what it is that he is Yoresh. So what, right. In other words, that means that he can't inherit b'muksa kibaroi either. So let's just see that inside again. Ma ishad ba'ala ein habal yoreshet ishto b'kever, af ishad b'na ein haben yoreshet imo b'kever, l'anchil le'achin min ha'av. So he will not inherit now his mother. It's not exactly the same, because over here it's not that his mother is b'kever, it's that he's b'kever. That's really not all that great a comparison, and this is why Tosfos actually gives a different shot. But nonetheless, it's good enough because it means the one who is bekever is not Yoresh, that woman here, in order to be Mantchil. Okay. In order to avoid the obvious problem of the wording, Tosfos simply says we're talking about a completely different thing. We're not referring to the case where the wife died. We're referring to the case where the husband died. And what we're referring to over here is a separate halacha, that a husband does not inherit his wife after his death, is the point. And he's not Yoresh Bekever in order to pass on that Yerusha to his own Yorshim. So in that case, if the husband dies first, it means that the Yorshe Ha'em, in this case the Yorshe Ha'isha, they will be the ones who will be Neichel. So in this case, everything fits perfectly, because now we're talking in both cases, it's the one who's supposed to be the Yoresh, to pass on the Yerusha, he's the one that's Bekever. And that is a perfect explanation, because it also explains why here we're calling the Ein HaBal Yoreshet Ishto Bekever, whereas before we spoke about the same issue also in terms of Roi Kibamuzak, a different way of referring to it. But in either event, the halacha here is definitive and clear. Omer Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Shimon, you should know that there is a Yerusha of a mother of from a son. And what we've said in the Mishnah is not really true. It's true as far as a husband is concerned, but a woman would be Yoresh, her own son. And Devar Torah, Av Yoreshet Beno, and the same way the father is Yoresh Beno, the Isha is Yoreshet Beno. How do I know that? Because remember that everything that we've been talking about had its basis in that curious word, mimatot b'nei Yisrael. And mimatot b'nei Yisrael meant that we compare a Yerushata Av to Yerushata Em. Because that's what it was been talking about. It was about Yoreshet Nachala, mimatot b'nei Yisrael, which showed us that the daughter must be inheriting from two separate matot, in which case her mother, we gave a case where her mother was from God and her father was from Asher, and now the daughter is going to have a Yerusha from both God and Asher. And that tells us a lot of dinim. We used it as a hekesh to say that in the same way a ben is kodem labat, when it comes to a Yerusha of the father, so too is a ben kodem labat, in terms of a Yerusha of the mother. And that was the whole machlokish we had with Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav, if you recall. He didn't hold of the mimatot. He said a ben and a bat are the same in the Yerusha of the mother. I'm reminding you of all of this because we're about to discuss it. So in a case, therefore, makish mateim lemateav, this is a hekesh. A hekesh doesn't work half ways. That's a klal. Ein hekesh lemechetza. And therefore, there's no way out of the implication that ma matea av yoreshet b'no, af matea em isha yoreshet et b'na. It's because where does that mata come from? We're saying mi matot. Who is the carrier of the matot? A woman. She's the one that's taking the nachla of God and passing it to this bat that's yoreshet mi matot. So if that's the case, it means that the relationship of the inheritance from mother to daughter in this case is the same as the relationship of the inheritance from her father to daughter. Now, the father to daughter is a two-way street. And therefore, the mother to daughter, and obviously mother to son, because we made that as a kal v'chomer, that was our makar. So that means that the mother to daughter or mother to son is a two-way street. And if you hold of matot, you simply cannot ignore that implication. Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Wow. This is crazy. I mean, look at the Mishnah. How can anybody say this? Ha'isha et bina, va'isha et ba'ala, ve'achei ha'em, manchilim ve'lo nochalim. It says, beferish, not like that. Obviously, you didn't have to wait till this point to ask it. You could have asked it from the first to the second case. In other words, the first case, the mirror image, which came first in the Mishnah. The reason that we waited to hear is because the way that it's put is ha'isha et bina lo nochalim. I mean, it was clear in the other case, which was the mirror image, which came first. But, you'd have to think for a minute. Over here, you don't have to think for a minute. The Mishnah is saying a woman does not inherit her son. Boom. Now, how can you tell me that I learn out from my matot that it's a diaraita, that there's nothing, no question about it, that she inherits her son? Omar Le said, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, to Rabbi Yochanan, that Mishnah? In Yodea Mishana. I don't know. It's not very intelligent, I can tell you that. Who said it? I have no idea. But there's something fatally wrong with that Mishnah, which we're going to get to show that there really is a fatal problem in the Mishnah. But is there not a very simple answer? I mean, what's really the big question? We know that Mimatot is not universally accepted. Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav rejected Mimatot, and he indeed said that the halacha lamaisa is that there's no din of kedima of a ben to a bat from the hekesh of matot. So why couldn't we just say that the Mishnah is Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzav? What do you mean we don't know who said the Mishnah? It's Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzav, the Lord Darish Matot. Because Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon understood that there's no way to make the Mishnah work according to Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzav. Lo mituk b'matnitin ka Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzav, because the Mishnah mentions the case of B'nai Achot. And remember that braita on the Mishnah that said, note that when the Tana says B'nai Achot, he means exactly what he says. B'nai Achot, v'lo b'not Achot, which we just said yesterday. What is that supposed to mean? That doesn't make any sense. How could there be a difference between the two? So we explained it as meaning, L'mai Hilchata, we asked, and Rav Sheshes explained as the only possible way of understanding it, that the meaning was likadem. That in fact, when it comes to every other Yerusha, the halacha is that we will always give kidima to the son. That sure doesn't work out according to Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav, because it was Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav who dafke held we don't do that. And he says, echad abein ve'echad abat shavin b'nechsei ha'em. That when it comes to a mother's property, there is no din of kidima of a son. So the very Mishnah that has this attached bright as a pirush that is specifically saying we do not hold of Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzav is telling you that we cannot possibly say that we've identified the Tana who doesn't hold of Mimatot, because the Mishnah in fact stresses, the way that the Brita brings it out, stresses that the sons specifically are the ones that are going to inherit if they are there, not the daughters. They will be the ones to inherit the rich uncle. So now we got a serious problem. So it's obviously a contradiction to the very sheet of Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav. Because, so wait a minute. So then, the Mishnah is hopeless. Because the Mishnah contradicts itself. And this, of course, was why Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon felt that there's something is wrong with this Mishnah. That's what he says. That's the Lashon of, I don't know who said it, meaning, very strange. So what indeed is the meaning of our Mishnah? Memanafshach. I mean, look, either you hold the matot, you don't hold the matot. To eat dorish matot, so then, by definition, a woman shall be able to be yorish her son and her daughter, because it's a two-way street, the same way that Yerushat Ha'am is a two-way street. And yet you go ahead and pass, no, it's a one-way street. Only goes from the mother down, doesn't go from the child up. And on the other hand, if you're telling me we're not dorish matot, then why did you say b'nei achot, as opposed to b'not achot, to be magdim, the ben to the bat, where the only makor was, from matot? So it just doesn't work out in both directions. So then how would you know, ilo dorish matot, ben de kodim labat b'nechzei ha'en minole, since that was part of the limud of mimatot? The olam darish matot. Ah, you see, your problem is that you think ein hekesh lemechza. But of course, the klal of ein hekesh lemechza is only where the Torah doesn't go out of its way to make it lemechza. If the Torah tells you, I mean to make this hekesh except for. Now look again at that pasuk. V'chol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot. What do you mean, v'chol bat yoreshet nachala? I mean, what do you got to say, yoreshet nachala? V'chol bat nachala mimatot. A bat nachala is like a bar mitzvah. Whoever is in line for inheritance in the female. You don't have to say yoreshet nachala. It's completely and totally redundant, that word. So if you throw in the word yoreshet, it's telling me we are about to discuss a hekesh vis-a-vis yoreshet, not moreshet. Let's make that very clear. So therefore, shayin yachad yomakro v'chol bat yoreshet nachala means that the comparison to the matot is only in terms of yoreshet, not in terms of moreshet. And therefore, indeed, the Torah is going out of a way to tell you this is a one-way street. And a bat can be yoreshet from her aim, which is exactly the case of matot, that she must have been getting a separate chaluka of machane dan in the case we use from her mother, but she would never give it back in the other direction to her mother, in which case, obviously, a son wouldn't either, because that was the whole makar of the fact that the son inherits the mother. And so, we have now identified this sivora. You may not know who it is, but we've identified the svar of the town of our Mishnah. You can hold matot, and you can be dorish yoreshet. Itma. Kinyan arei matai chozer. Rabba bar kozman sheyoshvim. Rabbi Yosef amar kozman sheoskim boto inyan. Om Rabbi Yosef kavati didi mistavra. The Om Rabbi Yudah shlosha shenechnasu levaker tochole. Ratzu kotvim, ratzu osim din. Now, if Rabba's right, and he saw gadai to kozman sheyoshvim, I wasn't very excited about that. I'm Rito Shvatzik, a of Kahana. And I asked him, and according to Rav Yosef, it's so nice. Minecha, Leichosh Dilma Hodarbe, you got exactly the same problem. Elamait Lachalameima, Tisiku Vinyana Lenyana. So I can't say the same thing according to Rabba. Achinami de Kamu, then Hodar Yativu. The fact is, Yilchata Kavate, in this issue and two others, Besada, Inyan umechza. Aisha et bina. So we say, Aisha et bina is manchil veina nochelet. Hatulamali. Hatana lereisha. Aisha timo. Aisha tishto. And it's all exactly the same case. Omrev shesha. So kamash malan. Di isha et bina dumya di isha et bala. Ma isha et bala. In ha baal. Yoresha tishto bekever. Afishat benayin abein yoreshiti mo bekever lanchilachin mina av. Omar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon dvar Torah ha'av yoreshit beno v'isha yoreshit et bena. Shenemar matot makish matea em lamatea av. Ma matea av av yoreshit beno av matea em isha yoreshit et bena. Eit ve'Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Shimon ha'isha et bena v'isha et bala. And you're telling me they are no chalim. Now everything's fine, right? No, not fine. Because the Mishnah also has that clause about Bnei Achot, and the Brite explained that Bnei Achot stresses V'lo Benot Achot. Lagabi, what halacha? Well, like we said, Amrin Lamai Yechata Amr Sheshet Lekadem. But if you hold the Sakadai of my sister Rabbi Zechariah ben Agatzavi, Rabbi Zechariah ben Agatzav doesn't hold of Kedima at all. Ha'omar Yechad, Habim, the Echad Abat Shavin ben Yechseya Aim. How do you explain that?
Who?
V'tana didan. How do you explain it? Ramon of Shach. I mean, idorish matot, so then an isha should be able to be yoreshet et bena. It should be a two-way street. Ilo dorish matot, then what's the basis of a ben being konam labat benichsia aiminole? Leolam dorish matot. But shine hacha, in the very pasuk of matot, it says, v'chol bat yoreshet nachala. That's dafka yoreshet, ve'ina moreshet.